Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I am John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, August 19, 2016. U.S. Ambassador to South Sudan says her government is concerned about the harassment of journalists in South Sudan.
Our Congress has made clear that in order for the United States to provide new economic support to assist South Sudan, that we would need to see the government take certain actions. Chief among those actions would, of course, be an end to fighting and that South Sudan do more to protect the freedom of expression.
And an analyst says IGAD countries must reach out to Riek Machar.
The whole region will also have to sit down and talk to Machar and see what his aspirations are, whether to set up a separate opposition going forward or to rejoin the government in which he was party.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United States ambassador to South Sudan says it is hard to convince her government to provide more funding to South Sudan government if freedom of expression continues to be violated in the country. Ambassador Molly Fee tells reporter Tito Justin that freedom of expression is a core American value and urges the government to do more to protect journalists and civil society organizations operate in the country.
The protection of freedom of expression is a core American value that has been a U.S. interest since the founding of our country. And it's a value we promote in South Sudan and in other countries throughout the world. As you know, every year we prepare an annual human rights report, which looks at different freedoms, including the issue of freedom of expression. And the most recent report documents very clearly our concerns about the challenges the press face in South Sudan. Also, our Congress has made clear that in order for the United States to provide new economic support to assist South Sudan to resolve the current economic crisis, that we would need to see the government take certain actions. Chief among those actions would, of course, be an end to fighting and a pursuit of peace. But there's also a specific request that South Sudan do more to protect the freedom of expression. And we have shared that congressional restriction with all senior members of the government, and so they're fully aware that that's an important goal of the United States in order for us to continue to do work here.
Who should the South Sudanese journalists turn to when they are facing harassment from the government security operatives?
I think it's a concern not only for South Sudan journalists, but all citizens who suffer abuse at the hands of security authorities. I think you saw the president address that issue when he spoke again on Monday. He spoke about the abuses of the SPLA and his regret and concern about them and his call for investigation and prosecution of those involved in harming citizens and in harming others present in this country. So let's hope that the government moves forward on calling to account security services who abuse all citizens, including journalists.
The U.S. seems to act very diplomatically about the lack of freedom of speech in South Sudan. What I know is the democracy and good governance are some of your government's foreign policy, like you said earlier on. Why are you not vocal about the mistreatment of journalists, civil society activists, and opposition politicians in South Sudan?
It is very clear to senior officials of the government that protection of freedom of expression is a key value of the United States, and that if we don't see action to improve the treatment of journalists, it will be difficult to convince the U.S. Congress to provide new economic assistance to South Sudan. So, in effect, Congress is saying they want to use the leverage of the prospect of American economic assistance to South Sudan to encourage the government to make changes in favor of journalists. We've also attempted, Tito, to provide support and training for journalists. As you know, the profession of journalism is underdeveloped in South Sudan, and we've been in conversations with the government about perhaps providing training to the media board that was supposed to be established, the media authority, to help it play a better mediating role between the press and the government. It would be better for the media authority board to handle these issues than the security services. Unfortunately, that project was halted because of the recent fighting, but we believe there are many ways to approach this problem, including in development of the professionalization of the media, as well as, I said, regular concerns expressed to government officials and in public documents like the Department of State Human Rights Report. I've also discussed these issues publicly on several occasions, including at speeches at the University of Juba when we opened the Radio Training Center, as well as at NGO forums discussing the issue of security service treatment of journalists. So I think it's fair to say that it continues to be an important point of discussion with our friends here in South Sudan.
Is your administration regretting for working very hard for South Sudan to become an independent state?
Well, I'm less concerned about difficulties for me, Tito, than about difficulties for the citizens of South Sudan. It's regrettable that after fighting for so many years against the North and achieving this incredible country, that the country has fallen into internal conflict and that there is continuous fighting. So the United States remains committed to trying to help stop that fighting and to help South Sudan get back to the path of peace. Yeah, no, absolutely. I think everyone in South Sudan, including the government of South Sudan, regrets the suffering of civilians here. That's why the United States is the largest donor of humanitarian assistance to the people of South Sudan, providing more than $1.6 billion in aid, life-saving aid, to people. We're very concerned about the fact that in 7 out of 10 states in South Sudan right now, they're 7 out of 10 of the legacy states, that the population is above the emergency threshold for acute malnutrition. The emergency threshold is 15%, and in 7 of the 10 legacy states, the number is much higher than 15%.
That's Molly Fee, United States Ambassador to South Sudan. She was speaking to South Sudan in Focus reporter Tito Justin yesterday in Juba. South Sudan's former first vice president, Riek Machar, has crossed into neighboring Democratic Republic of Congo this week. A UN spokesman says Machar and a small group of SPLA-IO showed up at the border of Democratic Republic of Congo in South Sudan on Wednesday. The UN mission in DRC, known by its acronym MONUSCO, notified the Congolese government, who asked the UN mission to move the former first vice president and his team from the border town of Dungu to an undisclosed location inside Congo. Waki Simon Wudu has this report for VOA from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi.
A South Sudanese analyst says regional and international leaders must intensify efforts to engage President Salva Kiir and Machar as principal signatories to the peace agreement signed a year ago if the deal is to hold. Jock Madud Jock, a researcher with a Juba-based think tank, the Sud Institute, says Machar's reappearance 1 month after he fled Juba when the fighting broke out means new first vice president Taban Dengai may have to step aside.
His resurfacing may be now renewing diplomatic efforts to see how he fit back into the current development, in which one of his chief negotiator in the peace agreement has already replaced him as first vice president, and all the SPLA and opposition leadership that was left in Juba has already joined the government in a bid to continue with the implementation of the peace agreement with or without Riak.
Jock says the regional bloc IGAD and other international partners need to work closely with the president and Machar to make the peace deal work.
The whole region will also have to sit down and talk to Machar and see what his aspirations are, whether to set up a separate opposition going forward or to rejoin the government in which he was party.
Mabior Garang, the SPLM-IO National Chairman for Information and Communication, says Machar will eventually return to Juba to participate in implementing the peace deal he signed with Mr. Kiir last August. Jock says Machar should focus on restoring peace and stability in South Sudan.
If he's going to try to reorganize whatever remains of his forces with an eye to restarting a conflict with the government, then, of course, his resurfacing would be a liability to the country. If he is coming back as a man of peace, the way he has always said, then, of course, there's room to accommodate him in a newly reconfigured government in which he will have a state. And in that sense, it would be an asset.
After Machar fled Juba in July, President Kiir also sacked 5 ministers allied to Machar and replaced them with the officials within SPLM-IO who backed the new first vice president, Taban Dengai. Machar's next move is not clear. His party officials in Nairobi say the SPLM-IO leader will be relocated to one of the IGAD countries. SPLM-IO spokesman Mabior Garang said his party will not mention by name which IGAD country for security reasons. Machar has been living in the Ethiopian capital Addis Ababa since he fled the December 2013 violence in Juba. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudu in Nairobi.
Aid workers in South Sudan today marked the World Humanitarian Day by observing a minute of silence to pay tribute to their colleagues who have died in the line of duty in South Sudan and across the world. The aid workers complain that it is difficult to access areas with families who are in dire need of humanitarian assistance across South Sudan. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
Humanitarian organizations in South Sudan light candles and held a minute of silence to pay tribute to their colleagues who were killed in South Sudan. Representatives of the humanitarian agencies say delivering assistance is increasingly becoming difficult across South Sudan. Ahmad Wassem is the acting humanitarian coordinator for South Sudan. He says it is hard to operate in the country.
We're seeing an increased dependence on humanitarian aid. Malnutrition is on the rise. Cholera outbreak and disease outbreaks are oftentimes encountered. Access to people who need humanitarian aid is becoming extremely difficult. And sadly, humanitarian aid workers are being targeted day in, day out.
Wassem says 59 aid workers were killed in South Sudan during the conflict which broke out in December 2013. A recent aid worker security report says South Sudan and Afghanistan have the highest number of aid workers killed on duty. The survey also notes that South Sudan is amongst the most difficult places in the world to deliver humanitarian assistance. Dipmala Mahla is MASCO's representative in South Sudan. She says the killing of aid workers must stop, adding that humanitarians are working to save the lives of women and children who do not deserve to suffer.
This is unacceptable. It must stop. Attacks on humanitarian aid workers deprives people in need of essential aid. The appalling and horrifying attacks on aid workers, in particular, the shocking attack, serves as a brutal reminder of the risks men and women take who bring hope and help to the people who live in the world's most, let's say, dangerous and fragile places.
The UN Food Agency, WFP, is one of the organizations whose staff have been killed in South Sudan. Joyce Luma is WFP's representative in South Sudan. She says the UN agency lost 4 aid workers in the country since 2013. Luma says the scale of human suffering in South Sudan is unbearable.
Close to 5 million people, more than a third of the population, are estimated to be suffering emergency levels of food insecurity and malnutrition. Malnutrition is above our emergency thresholds. In South Sudan today, we have 1.6 million people that are internally displaced, and more than 900,000 have fled to neighboring countries. As humanitarians, we have to work round the clock to bring assistance to these people in the most difficult situation.
Wassem says the IGAD brokered peace agreement could help aid workers access hundreds of thousands of people in need of relief aid. He is calling the warring parties to implement the agreement so that aid workers can access families trapped in the conflict.
We will see the government and the opposition addressing that particular important element of creating confidence, of enabling people to go home, return home, and leave their homes peacefully. So I hope that the government and others in position of authority will allow people to exercise their constitutional right to be able to live in their homes and communities without fear of an intimidation.
The World Humanitarian Day calls for global solidarity and unity with the focus beyond meeting immediate needs to reduce risk, build peace, strengthening resilience, and supporting long-term development across the world. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, how are South Sudanese Olympic team performing at the 2016 Rio Olympic Games? Find out when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you think Africa should become one big country? Why or why not?
I don't think Africa should become one big country because I think smaller countries is easier to govern and to rule.
No, it is impossible. Because now, even in a one state, you would find that it is very difficult for the leaders to manage the one country. So if the whole continent became a one state, it would be impossible for them to manage or to lead it.
If it's going to be headed by one political leader and there's going to be free border and people can move from one place to another easily, I think it's going to be good. It's going to foster investment.
No, I don't think Africa should become one big country. We are too diverse in our culture and way of thinking, and one big country will create chaos.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The UN World Food and Agriculture Organization has started distributing high-nutrient crop seed varieties in Zimbabwe to help farmers recover from seasons of drought that affected recent harvests. Sebastian Muyafu has more for VOA from Harare.
The Food and Agriculture Organization, the FAO, is distributing biofortified maize and bean seeds to farmers impacted by drought in Zimbabwe. A good harvest this coming March is key to helping farmers escape from this lengthy food crisis. VOA accompanied Chimimba David Piri, the head of the FAO for Southern Africa, to a seed distribution outside the capital, Harare.
We have had two bad seasons, and a lot of farmers do not have the adequate seed. We need to support the farmers to have the seed that they need for them to grow this season. Also to avoid the problem of having a continued humanitarian support. So it is very important that farmers plant and on time this year so that we avert hunger for next season as well, which would be very difficult for Zimbabwe, given that their own resilience, which has been eroded over the past 2 years, I don't think they can take it anymore.
Millions of people across Southern Africa are dealing with the food shortages as a result of El Nino-induced drought. In March, the UN Children's Fund said Zimbabwe is facing its worst child malnutrition rates in 15 years. Rural areas have been hit especially hard. The seeds being distributed are designed to produce more nutritious crops. Farmer Miriam Chagwenja from Silobela, about 300 kilometers southwest of Harare, planted some of the biofortified maize and beans in her field in February. She obtained them as part of an initiative funded by the British government, which is also funding this FAO program.
Beans dzine mukoho wakanaka wakakura.
She says, I would encourage others to go on board and join. I noticed that for the beans, you get more yields compared to other ordinary varieties. She says the beans have a higher iron content, which is good for pregnant women. The FAO says the ongoing seed distribution is targeting about 127,000 smallholder farm households in 8 districts before it rolls out to other parts of the country. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
A new smartphone app is helping Nigerians stay informed about seasonal flooding in the country, which has already killed 16 people this year. Weather forecasts say they expect flooding to continue through Nigeria's rainy season due to high water levels in the Niger River. Chris Stein reports for VOA from Lagos.
The Waiting app is free and works on any Android phone. The aim is to give anybody in three flood-prone Nigerian states advanced warning when flooding is expected. Timothy Olalekan Williams is the Africa Director for the International Water Management Institute, which developed the app.
The goal is to provide 4 to 5 day lead time warning on river height to allow government officials and planning agencies and disaster management agencies to take adequate precautions and make preparations for disaster prevention and management.
Two major rivers, the Niger and the Benue, converge in Nigeria before emptying into the Atlantic Ocean. Both have been known to spill over their banks during the annual rainy season. Flooding in 2012 was particularly severe, affecting 7 million people and leaving hundreds dead. Kayode Fagbeme, Deputy Director of Planning, Research, and Forecasting for the National Emergency Management Agency, fears this year could be a repeat of that disaster.
The level of water on River Niger has risen to a level where if there is a continuous rainfall and there is a high velocity of rainfall, we may experience flooding similar to what we experienced in 2012.
The Nigerian Meteorological Agency disseminates information through the news media when flooding is expected. Williams says the Waiting app will help those warnings spread even further.
But for the first time ever, we put into the hands of individual planners or anyone with a smartphone to be able to have this information at his or her fingertips.
The app so far only covers Kogi, Anambra, and Benue states in Nigeria, all of which are near the confluence of the two rivers. Williams says they have not yet had to issue any flood warnings since the app was released earlier this month. Chris Stein for VOA News, Lagos.
There are just few days left in the Rio Summer Olympics, and we are taking a look back at the refugee Olympic team as well as the South Sudan National Olympic athletes. The South Sudanese athletes have not won gold, silver, or bronze in the Olympic competitions. There is hope that they might win something in the final days of the competition. Ayen Bior has more from Washington.
Competing in her first Olympics this week, South Sudan's Margaret Rumat Rumas Hassan came in 71st in the women's 200-meter race, while her teammate Santino Kenyu finished 24th overall in the men's 1500-meter race. Both athletes did not run fast enough to qualify for the next rounds. On the refugee Olympics team, Paolo Amatun Lokoro and Angelina Nadia Lohalith from South Sudan ran in the 1500-meter race. Amatun finished the race in 4 minutes 3 seconds and finished 39th overall, while on the women's side, Lohalith ranked 40th with a time of 4 minutes 47 seconds. South Sudanese runner Rose Nathik Lakonyan ran the 800-meter race in 2 minutes 16 seconds and was ranked 61st, while Yech Por Bil ranked 54th on the men's side, with a time of 1 minute 54 seconds. James Tianjek was ranked 50th overall in the men's 400-meter. Popole Misenga and Yolan Bukasa Mabika, the judo competitors from the Democratic Republic of Congo, also competed this week. Misenga finished in round 16 in men's judo, while his teammate Mabika finished in the 32nd round of women's judo. Syrian Olympic swimmers Rami Anis and Yusra Mardini competed their Olympics debut in the butterfly and freestyle swimming competition. Anis came in 56th in the freestyle and 40th in the butterfly, while Mardini came in 41st in the butterfly and 45th in the freestyle swimming. There's still a glimmer of hope for both teams, however. Marathon runners Gorma Ding Makir and Ethiopian refugee Jonas Kinde are getting ready to run the men's marathon on Sunday. If either of them receive a medal, it will be the first for their teams. For VOA News, I'm Ayen Bior in Washington.
Well, let's keep hope alive. We hope that the team will do better next time. Some South Sudanese musicians are using music to promote peace across the country. Nine Juba-based artists recently recorded a song that condemns revenge attacks and the insecurity affecting much of South Sudan. Tito Justin spoke to some of the musicians and has this report for VOA from Juba.
Listen to the voice of African child crying out in agony. South Sudan is thirsty for peace.
That's the song Dafa Dafa, which is Arabic slang for revenge. In the song, the artist discouraged South Sudanese communities from the mentality of revenge. MC Lomax, Trisa C, Nikki Prince, and DJ Scent are some of the artists behind the Dafa Dafa song. The lyrics say, enough is enough, and South Sudanese are crying for peace. MC Lomax, who came up with the idea for the song, says, because of widespread revenge killings and insecurity for years, South Sudanese have been mourning the deaths of loved ones over and over again. He says the culture of revenge killing has led to the loss of many innocent lives.
The other communities are getting killed, the people there are getting killed, and at the end of the day, it is the same South Sudanese people who are dying, because both communities belong to South Sudan. So it's a very unfortunate situation.
Trisa C, who tries to promote women and girls' rights in the country through her music, says women and girls bear the brunt of the suffering from the conflict. She says that women and girls were raped on several occasions since the fighting broke out in December 2013 and strongly condemns the violence against women.
I think if we as a country withdraw from that mentality of paying back and somebody has stepped on your foot, you want to step on their foot back, I think something will happen. You know, peace doesn't have to be forced. Peace has to reign. And who is supposed to do that? It's us. We're supposed to calm down.
Nikki Prince is with the group Hard Life Avenue Stars. He says revenge killings are deeply rooted in tribalism. He blames parents for misinforming their children about other ethnic communities in the country.
Mothers are telling their children which tribe they hate. Fathers do the same thing, which tribe they hate. They tell stories that happened in the past, which was issues of our grandparents, hatred that they had before. It's being brought up to our generation, which we don't really like. And my main struggle in this music industry is change among our community, because it's what matters.
The artists plan to travel across the country creating awareness about peace, but are expressing doubts about their security in the areas they plan to visit. Nikki Prince says musicians' efforts to campaign for peace are also hampered because many people are afraid to attend music shows. He says nowadays, musicians earn very little income from their work.
I'm not able to make money to feed my family, so generally our music is halted. No concerts. You can't make concerts because most of the people have ran, and you know, people are scared to go out at night.
The musicians say they are tired of hearing about gunshots, death reports across the country, and like other South Sudanese people, they simply want peace. For VOA News, I am Tiro Justin in Juba.
And that's our show for this Friday. We'll leave you with more of the song Dafa Dafa by a group of South Sudanese artists who are preaching peace.
Crying out in agony. South Sudan is thirsty for peace. We represent the voices of South Sudanese people. Crying out, enough is enough. Revenge will not take us anywhere.
We have been listening to a group of South Sudanese with the song Dafa Dafa. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening and have a peaceful weekend. Remember to join us again on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Been mother, my own.